create a wellness mindset. We've discussed the power of story and the concept of writing a new wellness story. Now we're going to look closely at how to do that, at the principles and practice of change. We'll examine the 7 steps in the roadmap process to create a new wellness story. Recognize authorship, own your story, assess plot and storylines, decide what to change, map wellness strategies, author new experiences, and program new wellness identity. Each step is simple but not necessarily easy. The actual implementation of the ideas can be difficult because it often requires us to change the way we think about our lives, such as breaking bad or outdated habits, developing new ones, and remaining disciplined over the long haul. The first 3 steps in Module 1 are about awareness, a systematic way to ask questions of yourself. Step 1, recognize authorship of your wellness story. Remember the premise. Each moment we actively construct what we think, feel, and experience. Every day begins a fresh page. The dramas of everyday life do not simply affect us, they are created by us. Yet so often the story closest to us, our own, is the most difficult to know. Insight, understanding, even coming to the end of the past and ending an old story are important, but they're not enough. You have to create a new or at least revised story. That means that you have to take 100% responsibility for your life. So, how can we tell our life and wellness stories to ourselves in order to know which aspects work and which need to change? There are 4 principles in recognizing authorship. Principle 1, our experiences are always consistent with our assumptions. Beliefs are what we consider our basic truths that determine our experiences and results in life. Our beliefs write the software of our behavior. A baby elephant can be trained from birth to be confined to a small space. The trainer ties a rope around its leg and stakes the rope in the ground. The baby elephant will initially try to break the rope, but the rope is strong and it can't. The baby elephant has to stay in the area determined by the length of the rope. Now, fast forward. When this elephant grows to a mammoth adult size, it could easily break the rope, but it doesn't. Because earlier, as a baby, it couldn't. The 5-ton adult elephant is constrained by his assumption based on earlier experiences. Putting a little rope around one leg activates a belief system that determines his behavior. Beliefs cue behaviors. A belief is the mind's command to the brain. With the same belief, you'll continue to have the same results. If you change your belief, you can have different results. Principle 2. We don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. Our beliefs become our reality. Some things you have to believe in order to see. Our possibilities are always a manifestation of what we allow ourselves to consider. A farmer and an archaeologist pass through the same terrain of undeveloped land. The farmer sees the soil and envisions growing crops. The archaeologist sees signs of an ancient civilization and reconstructs its history. Both are right. Each views data to validate his story. The beliefs within us, our own internal map of reality, determine our perception of what surrounds us, including what and how we select, register, and process. We construct our storylines from these premises. We have to bring our beliefs into conscious focus to assess how well they work in present time. We don't get what we want, we get what we expect. We always make our beliefs come true. If you believe, for example, that no one will love you, you will interpret behavior and perceive responses in that way, or act so that you won't be lovable or will block someone from experiencing intimacy. You act in such a way to teach people how to respond to you. This actualizes your beliefs and validates your assumptions. Also, select carefully the people you spend time with. You are the average of the five people you are around the most. Do you like the results? Are they kind, successful, disciplined, achievers? One oversimplified version, are they winners or losers? Choose your friends and colleagues well. It makes a difference. The Framingham studies show that if your three best friends are overweight, there's a 50% better chance that you'll be overweight. Same with eating healthy, drinking moderately, and exercise. Principle 3. A new story can only occur by living in the present moment. Social scientists discovered that when you measure people's intentions, you affect their behavior. When people are asked, for example, what they intend to do, they're more likely to act according to how they answer. When you ask people the day before an election if they intend to vote, it increases the probability of their going to vote by 25%. A study of 40,000 people asked, "Do you intend to buy a new car?" The question increased purchase rates 35%. Other behaviors with increased frequency: asking if people intend to eat certain foods, to diet, or to exercise. So, state your intentions. Be specific. Write them down. Get a witness or accountability partner. The stated intention is most powerful when it's coupled with a specific action plan. Henry Ford said, "You can't build a reputation on what you're going to do." Principle 4. Our minds seek closure and infer causality, whether or not it's accurate. A number of research findings illustrate that we find something to make sense of what we perceive, even if it's not cause and effect. These research findings suggest that people can be unaware of the reasons they do what they do, but when asked for a reason, readily give one. A series of studies reported by Dr. Dan Gilbert of Harvard showed volunteers' words flashed on a computer screen for a few milliseconds. This was such a short time that they were unaware of the words that were shown and couldn't pick them out or guess from a multiple choice, yet they were influenced by them. When the word hostile was flashed, for example, volunteers judged others more negatively. When the word elderly was flashed, volunteers walked more slowly. When the word stupid was flashed, volunteers would perform less well on tests. When these volunteers were later asked why they judged, walked, or scored the way they did, there were two responses. First, they didn't know, but they didn't say, "I don't know." Instead, they quickly considered the facts that they were aware of and came up with some reason. For example, the volunteers who walked more slowly would come up with such reasons as, "Well, I was a little tired when I did the test," or, "I've been traveling for the last few days and I haven't slept well." Each was unaware of the fact that they were falsely attributing cause and effect. These findings demonstrate how our minds bring closure and how our brains end any dissonance by a causal explanation. To create a complete story infers both closure and a sense of effectiveness. Complete trumps accurate. This is why we rationalize or justify or do any number of other mental gymnastics that bring closure without ownership or growth, a finish without an ending. Emerson said it very simply, "The truth takes flesh in forms that can express it." I'd suggest reviewing the exercise in step 1, recognize authorship of your story. It's workbook page 1.5. There are two key concepts here. Plot refers to the core themes and storylines of life stories that inform what you look for and how you attribute meaning to what you find. Storylines applied here refer to your wellness story as your self-statement, your construction. It doesn't exist until you write it. The self-quizzes focus on major areas: identity or sense of self, ideals, needs, career, relationships. Here's an example of recognizing authorship. A woman wrote me after reading my book, Destiny, An Uncommon Journey. It's an allegory of self-development with Destiny the ship undergoing transformation inside and outside. She said, "That could be a profile of my life. I'm sure a lot of other people experience the same thing. I don't want to relive this pattern over and over again. There seems to be this circuitry that I keep entering. Destiny had to trust in order to learn. When will I learn to trust? I keep peeling back more layers. How many layers to these distortions are there?" She elaborated how frustrating therapy had been for several years with different therapists. I wrote back the following response. "We each have a personal story with a plot and storylines. Our beliefs ghostwrite that story. When you peel back all the layers of the onion, what's left is not a pure, unadulterated onion, but nothing, since you've destroyed the object of the quest. Instead of the model of layers going deeper to discover the next layer, consider generating a new story, going forward rather than backward. You can even assess when you're rewriting an old story and plagiarizing an earlier version of yourself. Then you can edit the repeating storyline or create a new one." She decided to work together in coaching for a few months to create a new story. She now writes stories for a major U.S. publication and is working on a second screenplay. She asked as we ended coaching if I would be in the audience when she was nominated for an Academy Award. I'd suggest you complete each exercise in step one before moving to step two. The same with subsequent steps. Step two, own your story. Review the assumptions and motivations constructing storylines, page 1.7 in the workbook. From an infinite sea of possibilities, our beliefs determine what we see and how we process it. It's our software package. Adding more information to the million bits of data that we process daily, like a new diet or a health club membership, will likely not have an impact unless you change the software. As we examine how a storyline is constructed, here's an equation that I think will be useful. Beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. Some examples of empowering beliefs from the workbook. I can make the money I need. I will find a way to exercise 6 days a week. Limiting beliefs also influence reality and behavior. Limiting beliefs have an effect emotionally and physically. For example, I can't find time to exercise. I don't have enough experience. My opinion doesn't matter. Notice how these examples include a variety of responses, behaviors, reactions, even complex patterns. First, you have to experience this as a choice rather than just the way things are. A specific example. Observe patterns that you create each day. The brain seeks patterns. Metaphors and narratives become brain structures. One example is attachment patterns. This brief illustration is vivid, and think about the human equivalents here. I recently raised a hatching of wild ducks, mallards, in a pen that I constructed at my ranch. The pen was necessary to protect them from critters until they're old enough to fend for themselves and flee danger by flying, especially since I'm there only on weekends. This necessitated living in the pen, partly submerged in the water at the edge of the lake, so they could learn to swim and develop naturally for about 5 weeks. When I opened the gate of the pen, they wouldn't leave. Despite their freedom to swim in a beautiful lake or just fly away, confinement in a small pen had become a comfort zone. I had to force them out. Then, as soon as they were released, all 12 moved in a group, never more than a few inches apart, a habit they formed in the pen. They continued to swim and fly in that tight pattern for a long time. Think about your attachment patterns, the default behaviors of your relationships with important people. Some may have been etched early with essential people in your life. Even though it's a default mode, even though you've incorporated it as a model, perhaps even use it with your children or spouse, it's still a choice. You can choose to continue or choose another pattern, another habit. Just because you have a history with someone doesn't mean you have to keep repeating it. A fundamental precept of step two, own your story. Whatever you experience, you either create or accept. Let's apply that notion by talking about point of reference and active versus passive. The point of reference is a basic component of story writing. People who don't own their stories have a premise of an external point of reference. This theme can include passivity or resignation, and the focus is on helplessness. They transfer responsibility to someone or something outside themselves. They react to situations they're in. Here are some typical characteristics of those with an external point of reference. They feel as if they have little or no control over things. Life is just happening to be reacted to. There's nothing I can do. They're vulnerable to the responses of others. Their language can absolve responsibility. She makes me so mad. They focus on responding rather than creating. I have to do this. They see themselves as unchanging. That's just the way I am. Some of these things are really easy to say. They believe that they can only change things by changing the outside source or person. If you would just... Now, however you filled in that sentence in your head suggests the relationship pattern you might examine. Didn't mean to trick you. Remember, I just paused. And a last example, when they experience a symptom in their bodies, they medicate it away. That's like seeing a warning light on the dash of your car and turning off the bulb rather than pursuing the problem. Those with an internal point of reference see their authority as their own. Their premise is acceptance of responsibility. Their theme is effectiveness. They know that at least since adulthood, they write their own stories. Here are some of their characteristics. They recognize accountability for their own lives. They are proactive. They plan. They look around the corner. When experiencing an unpleasant result, they examine the chain of events that generated the results. Then they look for alternatives. When they see a result that doesn't work, they decide not to continue. They decide what to change and to initiate that change. They realize that the menu of choices is also created. You can choose, and you can choose how you choose. Here's a related notion. Recognize active versus passive positions. Sometimes the story seems to write itself, to just happen to you. I ran out of time, so I couldn't work out. My thoughts ran away from me. It just seems to keep happening. I see each of these as a coachable moment with a client. You have to eliminate all the outs. Remember the anthropologist. The idea of a gun was enough to change everything. These passive positions disown the feelings, thoughts, or action as an active creation, as if the feeling you create makes you its victim. This passivity masks personal initiative. Rather than managing, overcoming, countering, or medicating a feeling such as anxiety, the first step is to acknowledge that even though it seems to just happen, you generate the experience. Then you can examine the meaning you attach. Insight and understanding alone do not generate a positive, successful new story. You create it. Once recognizing and owning your wellness story, step three, assess the storylines and plot. First, distinguish and address ideals. Workbook, beginning page 1.12. Ideals are internal standards of excellence. Ideals serve as a personal model of value and internal guide to purpose. Living up to a personal, attainable ideal generates a sense of worth and esteem. Failure to live up to an internal ideal results in the feeling of shame. Then, distinguish and address needs. In the workbook, beginning page 1.14, a need is an essential requirement, a necessity for mind, body, or spirit. An unmet need is the gap between an internal, realistic standard and reality. Unmet, frustrated needs create discomfort, and a need may be most obvious when it's not met. Ideals and needs are at the core of identity, part of the foundation of self. Of all the exercises and tools in the workbook, the needs and ideals assessment is the one I use the most with clients. I keep the three most important needs and the three most important ideals of a client inside the front page of the client's folder. The significance is to be sure that goals and strategies align with needs and ideals. Wants, which are wishes and desires, are replaceable with other wishes, and fantasies are interchangeable, but one need cannot substitute for another need. You can get sick if you don't have enough of a need. You can get sick if you have too much of a want. Unsatisfied wants may result from not having a defined goal, not having an endpoint of good enough, or trying to satisfy a past want in present time. You can never get enough of what you don't need. This vignette illustrates work to clarify needs and ideals and align them with goal behavior. Notice how we can learn just from someone's language and behavior the assumptions that drive their stories. The client said, "I feel like I've been cheated at the end of the day. It's 9 o'clock at night and I haven't eaten yet. The way my schedule goes is that I come home from work and my wife hands our son to me, and I'm in charge of him from 5 to 7. I love that, but I'm tired. She uses that time to do her computer work. Then I finish work from the day, and it's at least 9 o'clock. I'm stressed out." I highlighted two aspects of what he said: "I've been cheated," and "the way my schedule is." I pointed out that he was speaking as if he were not writing his own story, as if it were ghostwritten by someone else, not even approved by him. I knew he was in charge of his own schedule. Then I asked him simply, "Why are you writing your daily story in a way that you don't like?" He paused. He was kind of dumbfounded. "Well, I guess I feel like I have to. I feel like I have to support my wife and take care of our son in that way. My work just spills into the evening, into my private life, so I don't work out or relax. I even have to take calls from my people during the time with my son. Something is assumed and expected of me when I walk in the door. I feel like someone else is in control of me." "What do you hear yourself saying?" I ask. He responded after a moment, "Like someone else is writing my story for me." I said, "You're not acting like you own your story or your company." He said, "Well, how can I protect the time with my son?" I said, "Every yes you have to pay for with at least one no. Those yeses are getting pretty expensive. No protected time to be totally with him, for him and you. No total immersion in free play." I said, "Let's start at the beginning. Assume every day is a blank page and there's nothing on it until you write it. How ideally would you like your day to be?" "I'd like to use that time after work for my family and to relax." Then he constructed a day in which he was in charge of his schedule and knew it, in which he proactively decided the structure, the boundaries, and the parameters. He even worked in, at my nudging, exercise. I said, "I hear you beginning to write a different story, to take care of yourself. It's also a powerful model for your son, for him to see fully how a man can take care of himself and others. When he was really getting it and reflecting on what we were saying, I decided to go for it. I said, I want to share a hunch to see if it's useful for us to consider. I suspect the frustrations that you haven't spoken until now about how your company, your marriage, are there at a subliminal level and get communicated so that others feel it, your wife, your employees, your customers. I'd guess it registers as something not working quite right, and you or they don't know exactly why until it lights on something that makes it make sense, even though it's not the real cause. He thought for a moment and then said, yeah, like when I blow up or fire somebody. I said, that would end the tension for a while. He added, yeah, until I'm off to the races again. He recognized that if he structured a way to meet his own needs, to take care of the foundation of his wellness, that he was creating a personal and professional mastery. By having clear boundaries, he could be totally immersed in work during the day and totally free at home. Both were restorative for him. Part of the assessment of your wellness story, understand conflicted and contradictory storylines. One woman indicated that she wanted to lose weight, yet wanted to enjoy life, food, and her summer free of dieting. Two stories written simultaneously, but were contradictory. When you feel with one part of the brain and plan with another, you need a map. A paradigm, also called a mindset, is a model. It's a theory or frame of reference. It's simply the way we see the world. What we perceive, understand, and interpret is our individual paradigm, our map. The paradigm is the map that explains the territory, not the territory itself. With the right map, planning and strategy can make a significant difference. We each have a number of maps or paradigms in our head, storylines. We often are not aware of having them, but just assume that we see things the way they are. The brain has a mind of its own, and we are of two or more minds. For example, the prefrontal cortex says, let's set up an exercise program and plan a savings program. The limbic system says, let's have that cheesecake and order the big screen HD TV. Each struggles over the same dollar, hopefully without tearing it. Another example, we need to be afraid of the right thing. We fear what's easily remembered. We fear what we can't control. It's far more dangerous to be behind the wheel of a car, but in airplane seat 18C, we feel no control. Another example, smokers who are afraid of flying. Averaged across all participants, smoking shortens their lives by 5 years. Averaged across all participants, flying shortens their lives by 1 day. People fear someone entering their homes and committing a violent crime more than food entering their bodies that clog arteries and cause heart attacks. One of the unique qualities we have as human beings is self-awareness. The ability to reflect on how we think and what we do. This means that we can learn from our experiences and from others' experiences as well. This is why we can create a new story. We are not our old story. We created our old story. We are not our habits or our thoughts. We can think about these things and reflect on them. We can examine our paradigms to see if they serve us well. In your wellness story, is all of you going in the same direction? Do all the storylines of your wellness story advance the plot? Listen to your self-statements. What people say and do are inevitable, unavoidable self-statements of their beliefs and personal realities. Whatever you attribute to others, another person, group, or culture, comes from inside you as a self-statement. We always perceive and create outside to match inside, so pay attention to what you consistently like and dislike in another. don't project your intentions onto someone else's behavior. Acknowledge and own everything about yourself. Take yourself very personally. Listen carefully and explicitly to all the messages from your interior, to your whole truth. Feelings never lie. The body cannot deceive. If you want to find out what you believe about yourself and the world, look around at your life. It is the self-statement, the mirror of what exists inside you. When you feel preoccupied or disrupted internally, you'll notice that your house or office or car reflect that experience. All that you say in the syntax of thought, feeling, and behavior is about yourself. Remember, too, everyone else also makes self-statements. What you say about me doesn't tell me about me, it tells me about you. What someone says about you has everything to do with the speaker, even though focused on you. Listen, take in new information, but don't take it personally. Now, only a theory is ever this simple and clear. All others can do is share their experience of you. It is their experience and perception, their point of view. You can share your experience of someone else, but be aware that your perceptions are also filtered through your own lens. For example, if someone is being critical and judgmental of you, it's your decision whether to believe and accept that point of view. This reliance on someone functioning for you and on an external point of reference for validation can be limiting. In order to grow, you must move your point of reference to an internal one and own responsibility for your life and its expression. Listen for repetitions of the old story. We each generate a life story with a recurring plot. We repeat its continuing formula over time, even when it's not a winning one. Each repetition may more deeply reinforce basic assumptions and the false belief that you're a victim of fate. Remember this: whatever remains unconscious will be attributed to fate. To re-enter an old story and attempt to write a better ending creates a variation of the scenario, a new edition of the same process. The more you run away from something, the more you engage it, so the more apparent it becomes. And sometimes you can recognize something the first time only by denying it. At times we repeat just to see in relation to a fixed point of reference how much we've changed. Each time we return to the chorus of a song, the repetition is satisfying, but those same words are slightly different because more of the lyrical story has unfolded and we see more of the evolving journey at each juncture of repetition. You're always reaching your goals, whether they're conscious or unconscious. If your personal or professional life is not as gratifying as you would like, if you believe you have not attained your objectives, look more closely. It's helpful to know consciously and specifically what those goals are. You might be undermining your success by being too vague in your objectives. Do you fear specifically yet dream vaguely? For example, if you want to change your body, begin with changing your body image. Visualize the specific image you want to achieve. Your ideal body image, your true body self, not a false body self, for example, of overweight or out of shape. Then create an informed plan to get there. Your body is the projection of your mind's software. We'll talk more in a bit about the art and science of structuring a visualization. And there's a visualization exercise in the addendum. Listen to your language in regard to your goals. If you say you'll try to reach a goal, you may be protecting yourself from anticipated failure. Trying immediately says that there's not a full commitment, a potential diversion to other alternatives against failure. You know the words of someone not committed. I'll try, I should, I ought to, I know I need to. These build in a takeaway, a detraction, by not being totally committed, by creating an out. When someone says, "I'm going to try to quit drinking," you know that he or she will continue drinking. Here are the words of someone committed. "I will." Build in accountability by asking yourself, "By when?" Our SMART goals wouldn't have a T on the end for time. SMART goals are on page 3.4. We'll get there. Here's a quote from John Robbins in his book, Healthy at 100, The Scientifically Proven Secrets of the World's Healthiest and Longest-Lived People. "What if there were a pill that would keep you fit and lean as you aged while protecting your heart and bones? What if it were as good for your brain as for your body? If it made you stronger, more confident, less susceptible to depression? What if it improved your sleep, mood, and memory, and reduced your risk of cancer, all while adding life to your years and years to your life? A great number of studies have found that exercise can provide all these benefits and more, even for people who begin late in life." Listen to your body. Your body always speaks to you. You sense it and feel it when you eat healthily, work out, and rest well, at the time and especially later. A huge, delicious dessert will taste great at the moment, but the residual feeling and awareness of regret will last longer in time than the immediate pleasure of the great taste. Also reflect on what studies and your experience show. The major taste impact, up to 80%, is in the first 3 bites. After then, it's redundant. Your body has already accommodated to the sensation. Same principle as Coke addicts, the hard stuff, not the soft drink, who describe how they chase that first high of the initial use. Listen also to the message in each pain, discomfort, dis-ease, change of function, exhilaration, sensation, and energy spurt. There are no accidents within the system, the story of your body. As with any complex system, a change of one component affects every aspect of that system. Of your body's 11 systems, only 2 have memory, the nervous and immune. A new story involving your body inscribes a new text for these 2 systems and benefits your entire body. Listen to your body. Acknowledge and accept its somatic language. Acknowledge what works and what doesn't. Hear your body speak when you eat too much, eat foods that are unhealthy, or drink too much. It's not rocket science. Listen to your body. It's sensitive, accurate, immediate. Pay attention to the message when you work out, when you feel refreshed by taking care of yourself. Your body makes you accountable. Your body's language communicates the accountability of stress and tension, as well as of relaxation and contentment. You are creating hypertension, hypertension, emotional tension's physical expression of high blood pressure. Understand and change the process. Acknowledge and accept what your body speaks. In pain, headache, chest tightness, churning gut, being easily winded. A physical symptom contains the message, yet importantly, it is the message. Symptoms give disguised voice to what you avoid knowing. A symptom is a sentinel of a process that begs to be understood, listened to rather than silenced, respected rather than disregarded. A storyline needing to be heard, a symptom repeats until translated. Somatic language is literal. A pain in the neck, purging something, weeping skin, hypertension. A psychological symptom answers a question not asked consciously and proffers a story with its own history, dynamics, and meanings. This is from Milrad Pavic. It's easier to fall ill than learn the truth, so take care of your maladies. They always have something to tell you. You are the author, not the victim, of your symptom. What does a symptom ask of its creator? To listen, to hear the message spoken in physical or symbolic language, to learn from it in order to address the change needed. Do you have a symptom speaking to you, some message you disavow, one you don't want to hear? When you listen to whispers, no one has to shout. A final thought. Schedule an appointment with yourself. The passive version is, if I find time. Schedule an appointment with yourself to meditate. If you use some of this time to also brainstorm with yourself, here's a suggested prompt. Everyone on earth has one thing in common. Our choices in life define us. Those who provide service to others, such as authors, money managers, therapists, leaders, teachers, coaches, especially parents, have their answers counted many times. Make it matter. Thank you.